two, three, four.
Y'all ready for this?
Ladies and gentlemen.
Never been done before.
We're talking about a subject.
To bring you to the light.
Farewell to you, people.
Hold up. David D. Hard Knock Radio, hanging out with you this afternoon. We've been meaning to get this sister on the show. We finally have her. She's no stranger to our airwaves. We know her, we love her. And she is always a person who is way ahead of the times. Her name is Ashara Akandayo. Many of us know her as an artist, but she's more than that in my opinion. How would we best describe you, Ashara? Forward thinker, groundbreaking thinker, guru, should we use that word?
It's so good to be here with you, Davey D. It's been a minute, yo. It's been a while. I'm glad to join y'all on Hard Knock today.
Right, but how do we best describe you, though?
You know, I'm a curator.
Curator, that's the word.
And steward. And I've been trying on this new frame recently called cultural theologian. But at the end of the day, I'm a curator. You know, I take care of and collect and convene. So, you know, I'm a steward, you know, for our community.
Right. Well, there's a couple of things. You've been doing 9 days of radical practice. So this weekend will culminate that. You also been in the forefront of talking about artists as first responders. I think when people first heard that, they were like, huh, what? Mm-hmm. And now with people talking about the importance of defunding police and redirecting money into the arts community and understanding that art is more than just paintings on a wall, that phrase seems to hit right on time. What were you thinking when you talked about art as a first responder and has that initial conception evolved, you know, 4 or 5 years later?
Mm-hmm. Thank you for that. So I've been stewarding this new initiative called Artist as First Responder. And officially, yes, for the last 6 years or so. But, you know, when I was thinking and really understanding and feeling into who is it that shows up first when there is a crisis, it's the artist, right? It's the creative. And how we make place and way for new imaginings, how we make solutions out of our own divine self, right? And even those of us who don't call ourselves artists, it's our creativity and our creative self that shows up. So not only in crisis, but in celebration. I would say that I never heard the term first responder until after the 9/11 situation in the United States. And, you know, over the years, of course, there's going to continue to be crisis. There's going to always be someone who shows up first. And, you know, in my time in Oakland over the last 11 years, when we really have been able to, and specifically in the last year, been able to see what it means for the artists to continue to create, what it means to have our streets transformed, what it means to have the poetry to continue, the authorship to continue, the movement to continue, the music to continue. We know that we would not have survived any of this uprising, any of this pandemic, any of this shelter in place without our creative colleagues, without the artists showing up to remind us that there is also beauty and celebration inside of the struggle.
Let me ask you this. When we talk about artists showing up, do you separate artists in terms of those who show up because they're really connected to the community and they want to heal the community and they want to be in concert with the community versus those who go, this is an opportunity for me to make some money. This is an opportunity for me to sell records. This is an opportunity for me to, you know, in 2021, build my brand. And I don't mean it to be cynical, but, you know, that is, you know, I've been in meetings where people say, you know, every crisis is an opportunity for you to build your brand. So I will literally show up there and, you know, take a selfie in front of a burning building and then transform that selfie into a Pulitzer Prize, you know, artifact. Or we saw that in Ferguson where people were showing up and taking those iconic photos, you know, and literally winning Pulitzer Prizes. But were they interested in transforming and helping heal the disruption that they were experiencing? So how do we kind of navigate that terrain, understanding that there are rewards for showing up and being in the middle of a crisis, even if you're not there to try and help solve the crisis?
Mm-hmm. You know, I appreciate you complicating the question. It's I don't see it as a problem, and I don't separate the artists who are, as you said, capitalizing inside of this capitalistic society on their creative genius. And, you know, I think, you know, it kind of speaks to this idea of activists and organizers being put into this bubble where we're not supposed to make money, you know, where we have to consider, like, you know, you're only down for the struggle if you're, you know, if you're struggling and if you're scrapping, you know, and that can't be, you know, that continues to perpetuate this idea that you're only righteous, you know, if you are not somehow connected to the system of making money. And in the United States, that means, you know, being engaged deeply in capitalism and what the impact of that has looked like. Now, given we have to look at, you know, the racialized implications of capitalism, we have to, I think, really investigate and interrogate, you know, our own work and our own intentions. Mm-hmm. But there is intention and there is impact. So maybe you showed up at Ferguson, or maybe you showed up in 9/11 and, you know, in front of those two buildings that used to be standing, you know, in Manhattan, and you took some photos and maybe you got a prize for that, you know. But really, what does that, what does it mean that someone actually documented what happened there, that someone is like giving us a different kind of perspective, whatever their art form may be? You know, as I said, the poetry that came out of Ferguson, the poetry that came out of the streets of Oakland, also, you know, maybe people made chapbooks, they made zines, you know, they got a publisher, a lot of it. And, you know, I'm not mad about that. You know, what I want is for us to, you know, really start to be even more critical of our actions and really see what that might look like. If we're going to, you know, show up, you know, in that place, can we teach someone else how to do it? You know, can we bring someone else up with us? Can we mentor the babies? You know, what right. does that mean? Yeah.
Well, I didn't mean to complicate the question for complication's sake. Mm-hmm. But I was in, I asked the question because in my mind, what is expression, and in particular Black expression, singing, dance, a certain type of way in which you show up, is communal ritual, communal healing. It is not art, it's expression that is needed. You know, we may go and hear the soothing sound of a gospel choir. Some people will say it's art and want to, you know, commodify it. But for the people in that church, it's ceremonial. It's something that we need to absolutely heal. You talked about the spoken word. Some of that we just need, especially when we tap into the function of spoken word, which goes back before our sojourn here in this country. But it's part of, you know, understanding that words can be manifested into, you know, things that we believed impossible. And so when we talk about art, are you connecting it to the healing ceremonial? You know, you mentioned the word theology, you know, type of functionality that so much of what we do is often needed. But from an outside perspective looking in, we call it art. You know, we see the Dasantes dance, you know, do this ceremonial thing. They have the feathers on. Some people go, it's art. But for them, it's a very serious ceremony. So why I was complicating that question.
No. And it's a beautiful, I love this. I love this disruption of the idea of it. And it is absolutely part of our healing ceremony. So, you know, when we are in this space, there's this Western, patriarchal idea that there's this separation between what is art and what is functional. That is not our African understanding. That is not our understanding as Black people.
Right.
And yeah, you know what I mean? So it's like art is not something to just be like created and then hung on the wall to be admired.
Well, it's a participatory thing.
Absolutely. It is ceremony. And so, you know, inside of the Artist as First Responder platform, we have six ideas, which, you know, part of it is site-specific ceremony. It's like we show up to heal ourselves. Creatives, artists, you know, quote unquote artists are also, we are trying to heal ourselves first as we heal our family, as we heal our community, as we heal into a wider net of people. Mm. And absolutely, it is very much about acknowledging and supporting creative people whose practices actually heal communities and save lives. That is exactly what I'm saying, that artists show up first in crisis and in celebration, that we are actually doing this work to be human on this planet in harmony with all beings on the planet. And that includes us creating ways to be beautiful, creating ways to be angry, figuring out ways to channel our rage and our genius. And it is one and the same.
Ashara, do we have a responsibility as artists let me rephrase this. One of the responsibilities that is often put towards artists is that they have to improve their craft. You know, if I'm a DJ, I got to practice, you know, got to come up and be on top of my game. If you're a dancer, same thing. If you're a singer, you know, you just don't sit back and then just show up. You got to hone your craft. Mm-hmm. But in terms of what you're talking about, artists as a first responder showing up at the crisis, do we have a responsibility to dwell deeper and hone our craft spiritually? Do we have a responsibility to really understand what the ancestors actually did when they expressed themselves in ways that we now call art, more than just me saying, well, I'm talking to the ancestors? Well, what does that really mean when you talk to the ancestors? It's a cute phrase, but what does it really mean? You know, and have you really studied that? And you know, and if it requires you to do more than just, you know, say those words, but actually maybe meditate or pray or do some sort of preparation to really receive, and I'm just using this as an example, the wisdom of these ancestors you're supposed to be talking to that then is manifested through your expression of singing, dancing, what have you. Do we have a responsibility to really hone our skills, so to speak, in that direction?
Mm-hmm. You know, it is an art practice. We call it an arts practice. Mm-hmm. And, you know, whether or not you're a professional at it, they're always called practices, right? It's a medical practice, right? Mm-hmm. So we're always in process. That means that you can't sit still on it. You know, you have to keep your chops together. And, you know, I think about my partner, Dr. Angela Wellman, who is the founder of the Oakland Public Conservatory of Music, who talks about the blues and who talks about and teaches jazz and is very much committed to music education. And as a musician herself, as a trombonist, she talks about keeping her chops together. If you don't know the scale, when it's your turn to feature, when it's your turn to solo, you can't improvise.
Right.
You know, you have to have practiced over and over and over. It has to be made root. It has to be a routine, something that you know how to do backwards, forwards, up and down. so that when it's time, when there's something that shows up for you, whether that be like, it's time to get this party cracking, you know it as a DJ. You have to be able to like move with the people. You have to be able to move with the environment that's going on, or you fall flat. So yes, I believe that we have a responsibility to keep our chops up. I believe that we have a responsibility also to perpetuate the craft, whatever that may be, that we have an opportunity to also in our sharing with ourselves, healing ourselves, keeping our stuff, you know, tight, that we also have the opportunity, and it happens that the community benefits from that. Yes.
But we still have to come back to being able to do this with conviction. If you're using Dr. Wellman, the trombonist, as an example, sure, she can technically be skilled and know how to move her hands and how to have breath control. But if we can't feel her, right, then something's missing. As a DJ, I can mix and I can scratch and I do all that. But if I can't connect to the audience and read the room, so I walk into your party and I decide, oh, I'm looking around. I see the room. Let me play a bunch of, you know, songs with pejorative words about women. And I didn't read the room. You're not necessarily feeling me unless that's really my conviction. Like I'm coming here to really express myself that way. And so that seems to be a practice. That seems to be something that you have to, I won't say hone your skills, but you have to, you know, you just don't really get deep into having conviction overnight. It's something that comes over time. Would you not agree? Or is there another angle when we talk about art? So it's felt and not just heard and seen.
That's right. It's felt, you know, it becomes part of your bone marrow. And yeah, reading the room almost is a skill. Therefore, it can be acquired, right? So some folks...
Yeah, but you got to also connect and feel the vibe. That's what I mean. If we're talking about Black art,
I'm agreeing. You
know, yeah.
We got to tap the spirit. We have to channel the spirit. You know, it's there are things that we see because we are attuned to see it, because we've been culturally, you know, given that information to like look and see things. You know, when you be out, you'll be out on a walk in the forest and you'll see the ancestor in the tree. You'll see the face that's like in the water. And you might be walking with someone who was like, no, I don't see that. What are you talking about? You know, but you might be looking for it. I think that there is a tension that happens when you allow yourself to be creative, when you allow yourself to be curious, when you allow yourself to be open, that says anything is possible. And I'm going to open all of the opportunities in this body that I have to be tapped in to what is possible, not only outside of me, but definitely, you know, inside of me, and how I get to like share that with community. You know, yes. You were so on point, you know, in terms of like Black folks, brown folks, indigenous folks, we have to be able to tap the land and the information in the on the land, the information in the soil and the rocks, at the water and the tree. All of that is also part of our legacy. It's part of our heritage and our cultural understanding. And it's information that we get to use in sharing, you know, our creative practice and our practice with each other. Right?
And we also live in a world that historically has feared that.
Mm-hmm.
And because it's feared that, it's done everything in its power to redirect that, or to discount it, or to denigrate it. Right. So it seems like it's no accident that when we come up with our Black expressions, it is initially demonized that jazz is bad. We forget that jazz was bad. Blues was bad. Soul and funk was bad. Rap was bad. Right. It's always that. We also know that our government has surveilled many of our artists. I was just talking to a class the other day and remarking how, you know, the government surveilled Bob Marley, and what did he sing about? Love. They also surveilled Michael Frani, you know, and he was singing about love, and everybody else in between, right? And so you're sitting there going, well, what is this about? And it seems like, you know, Mahalia Jackson was surveilled, you know? And so obviously they understand that they're the power that needs to be disconnected from the larger community. So I come back and I say that at the end of the day, if we're not really tapping in or really learning the craft, which may include history, they may be telling us that, you know, Shar, you don't need to practice. You've got talent, just show up. You know, that's how we all do it. Meanwhile, they're practicing day and night and hoping that all you're doing is sitting back and not really maybe taking time out to commune with that higher being. In fact, what we have now is a culture that even discounts the spirit.
You talking real talk today. You know, we inside of a system that's like
We're in a crisis now.
We are in a crisis, and we weren't meant to survive the initial crisis. Okay, and we have, and we thrive. And so, yeah, here's this again, this tension with something that is initially just seen as vile, seen as uncouth, seen as not acceptable, that we are now drawn to, that we are now making money from, right? So there's the system around that.
Mm-hmm.
That's what this looks like. And this need for us to get inside of understanding the history of that, that's what this 9 days of radical practice has been about. That's we're inside of Black August, you know, we're coming up to the end of the month. And what, you know, has been the call for us is to study, right? We have to study, we have to train, you know, we have to read, we have to rest, we have to, you know, recalibrate our mind and our bodies to be inside of what has happened to our practices, what has happened to our words, what has happened to our actions.
Right. You know,
what does that mean? So this radical practice is about a practice, a moving back and forth on a timeline, a moving back and forth on a practice line, a moving back and forth on the scale, you know, of what it means for us to think about critically all of these pieces that you're putting together in terms of artists as first responders, in terms of like artists as capitalists, artists as money maker, art making, and, you know, an artwork for sale.
Right,
you know,
right.
Can you buy art? Yes. You know, and that is the job of some of us, is to actually make something that allows them to like pay their bills and pay tuition for their babies and buy food and also trade, you know, that right. We have to, you know, think about what are the economic systems that have allowed
all that, to, all know, that could be. I would argue that if all that is devoid of spirit,
mm-hmm.
if all that is devoid of communal connection,
mm-hmm.
then it becomes a caricature. You know, it becomes a meaningless artifact. You know, some people go and go, well, why did they buy that painting that just has a red dot on the middle of a white canvas, and they didn't buy the painting that seems all detailed and is technically proficient? And maybe mm-hmm. the red dot on the white canvas, you could feel the spirit of it and it means something, while the other one is like, it's good, but it's like dancing. You know, you can put out a mat that says, here's how you do the salsa, you know, one, two, one, two, you know, and do that. But if you can't swing,
that's right.
Then it's like, you know, it's like I see your steps. You got it down, but man, it ain't got no soul.
You know what I'm saying? You know, hey, man, art is subjective. You might really be feeling that red dot. That red dot might mean something to you around your migration story for your family. You know, that red dot.
I'm talking about something deeper.
But what I'm saying is subjectivity is real. You know mm-hmm. what I'm saying? And you also are speaking to how we as brown folk on this planet tap into the spirit. Because, yeah, you got to learn the steps. That's what it is. One, two, one, two, one, two. But at a certain point, you got to let go of the steps. You got to let go of that intellectual knowing and tap.
You got to swing. Yeah.
And that's the somatic knowing. Intellectual to the somatic, you know.
And that's where the dividing line came. Because when those early jazz swingers, you know, musicians were swinging, it was devil music. That's that African stuff, you know. Tuck that in, you know. When you shouting and you're elongating your notes, you know, that's not proper. what are you doing? You know, yeah, all the polyrhythms. Well, I mean, yeah, you know,
look, the polyrhythms be getting you open, as we say. Mm-hmm. You know, there many of us can be like, when did that DJ save my life? As you speak to the surveillance that's happened from creatives, from musicians, so many musicians, anyone who can tap the spirit, who can crack your heart open, particularly the masses, the systems that be, the structure is going to try to squash that. You're going to try to quiet that. You're going to try to like stop that. And at the same time, that same system is going to try to manifest a way to manipulate it so they can make some money off of it. You know what I mean? So it's crazy. This is like the craziness and the madness of this. You got to learn how to navigate it. And that's what comes down to. You got to know your chops, because when it's time to like get open, when it's time for you to like, I'm about to give you a taste of my spiritual experience here as a creative, as an artist, as a musician, as a dancer, you feel it, because you sit in the audience and you are watching this ensemble like move through spirit, and you feel it, right? And you talk back, right? It's a call and response, give and take. You can't just sit there and watch the dance theater of Harlem and not give them breath, not give them sound. You can't watch Amara Thomas Smith and Deep Waters Dance Theater move and not give them some props. You know, we gotta give it up. You gotta give it up, you know.
Real talk. So as we close out, Ashara, what do you have this weekend? You know, how can people tap into artists as a first responder, you know, above and beyond, you know, the conclusion of this 9 days of radical practice?
Well, I want folks to be able to go to the website. It's artistsasfirstresponder.com, no S's, artistsasfirstresponder.com, and tap on the Radical Practice page. So what we've been doing for the past 7 days is a mantra, a meditation, and the mantra is, I claim my peace and my power in this radical moment. Mm-hmm. On Sunday, which will be the closeout of our 9 days, I'm offering a virtual meditation. You know, it's really more of a journey, you know, a conversation with ourselves around what it means to have spent the time together, whether it's just a minute a day. You know, up on our Instagram page at Artist as First Responder, I've been putting up images and information on freedom fighters, on, you know, really the information on the beginnings of Black August as a movement, as an arts movement, and who it is that perpetuates it. And that is the artists who keep it going, as well as the abolitionists and folks, you know, working to take away the carceral system that is part of all aspects of every institution in the United States, and the ways in which we lean towards locking up and punishing folks. And, you know, what does that mean, right, you know, in the creative system? But on Sunday morning at 9 a.m. Pacific time, I'm just going to offer a short meditation, reading from some sacred texts, offer some sound meditation from our beloved local harpist from the hood, Destiny Muhammad, who has shared a piece with me as well. And just take some breaths together in meditation and chanting, I claim my peace and my power in this radical moment. So I hope folks go to the website, artistsasfirstresponder.com, and just RSVP, and then it will be up online, the meditation at 9 a.m. on Sunday, the 29th.
There you have it. Ashara, thank you for joining us this afternoon on Hard Knock Radio. You know, we look forward to seeing you transcend even more. We're going to take a break right now. Folks, we'll be right back.
Hard Knock. Turn the speakers in your car up. Quality program. Turn in for the real talk. Don't stop. EMN at it again. Sandman, Daddy Man. Chris Juwan Kim. Yeah. Innovation. Stimulating ill conversation. Anything else should just imitate. Simulation. Step into the zone. The Bay Area zone. Hard Knock Radio. Let's go. Big shout out to Davey D. Yeah, right. Feel me. Yeah. Honing down at Hard Knock Radio.
Hard Knock Radio.
Kind of crazy though.
Oakland, stand up.
Stand up.
Ensemble, Big Now Woo.
Yeah. Kansas City.
Yeah.
Bellevue. Come on, check out.
Why every novice think they hard not when they ain't going all in and ain't paid the cost of the fee? Hating that they made they beats, trying to eat till they're ready for the steel gray beef. Say please, maybe they'll save you a seat at the table with a great bread making a speech. Say some peace to their lovers, I need.
Real Talk Radio.
You and I rocking with the best in the West.
Yes, Coach. Monday through Friday.
Sing it, Chris.